So just before we started, I asked River to light the two candles on each side of the Buddha. Those are handmade candles. Some Sangha members worked on, and the money for those candles will be sent to relief in the Ukraine. And there's a few more out there if you want to donate. The suggested is, I think, $20 for the two candles. And it'll be sent to some, I can't remember the name of the organization, but working to help relieve the suffering, the refugees that are experiencing, and people within Ukraine itself. And the reason I asked her to light them, because I want to talk about war tonight. Every day I have read the news about the war in Ukraine, always longing for a message that the fighting and the terror has stopped, or is at least nearing the end. And it seemed to me, you know, a couple of weeks ago, there were some helpful moments when the talks between Ukraine and Russia, at least as reported, you know, they were making progress. Although the progress was always vague, they never really talked about what that progress was, at least in the articles that I read. And now I don't even know if the talks are going on anymore. And as you know, the war continues. More terror, tragedy, more death. There has always been a war going on somewhere. Since we humans started to form large groups. I checked the etymology of the word war, wondering where it comes from. And it comes originally, tracing all the way back to a proto-Indian European source. And that source, the meaning of that original word, which at least I think was spelled W-E-R-R-E, at least in one place I looked, what the original meaning was to confuse, to mix up, to bring into confusion. This is certainly, right, one result from war. Archaeologists believe they found the site of the earliest prehistoric war along the Nile River, dating back about 13,000 years ago. The site contains a large number of human bones with arrowheads lodged in them. And the first recorded war took place in Mesopotamia, that cradle of civilization in the east, about 2,700 BCE, between the forces of Sumer, or Sumer, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, maybe Sumer, and Elam, another kingdom nearby. And when I read that, I wondered, has there ever been a long period of time when the earth was free of war? As I reflected on war, I remembered the Somalian Civil War, the Syrian Civil War, of course, Iraq conflict, Darfur, Afghanistan, Tigray, Yemen Civil War, the Russo-Ukrainian War of 2014, Mali War, Myanmar conflict, and it kind of goes on, right? Those are the ones that I could remember reading about fairly recently. So I wondered, you know, why? Why does this war, this current war, affect me more strongly than the other wars and conflicts raging around the world at the present moment? I don't have family or friends in the Ukraine. And although I was raised in Calgary, I grew up with schoolmates who were second-generation Ukrainian. And on occasion, I would visit their homes and be introduced to Ukrainian culture, foods, Easter eggs, those kind of things. Maybe perhaps because my ancestors come from Europe, or that Putin has raised the possibility of using nuclear bombs, or maybe it's the Western media so constantly bringing the horror of this war into our worlds to such a strong degree. Maybe those are some of the reasons. But honestly, I don't think I know all the reasons why this war seems to have entered my bones, why it has cut my heart. But I'll keep asking. There is a koan used in the traditional Japanese koan system. You know, those kind of questions or short stories that are posed for the student to ponder, to think about, or to meditate on. At any rate, this koan is very simple. It says, stop the war. Stop the war. Now, I don't know for sure, but I think this is a kind of abbreviated form of a traditional koan called Stopping the Fighting Across the River, which is found not in a Chinese koan collection, but actually in a Japanese koan collection. It's called the Shonan Kato Roku, which kind of basically one translator has put called it the Record of Kamakura Koans. The story itself comes from the time of the Mongol conquest of China back in the 13th century. Now, this was a period of time when the Mongols were entering into what was known as China proper, and eventually took over, and of course that began the whole Mongol conquest that spread across Asia all the way into Europe, bringing with it the Black Plague, among other things. But at this time, during the 13th century, there were 13th and 14th century, a number of Chinese teachers who came to Japan in order to leave the war-torn places that they had lived in China and to bring the Dharma to Japan. Anyway, so this story, this koan is called Stopping the Fighting Across the River. And it goes like this. In the first year of Tu, which is 1275, priest Mugaku had planted the banner of the Dharma at Chenju Temple in the province of Daicho when the Mongols invaded China and overran the whole province. The teacher accordingly withdrew to a different temple, Nengjian Temple in Wuzhou. But the next year the Mongols came plundering into that province too. When one party of the Mongol soldiers attacked Ningju Temple, everyone fled except the teacher, who sat quietly in the main hall. The Chinese official who was visiting, Chen Xiang, and he had often visited the teacher. He was a pupil, and it was very common in China at that time for officials to study Buddhism, particularly Zen or Chan Buddhism, under one of the Chinese teachers. So this was one such person. So one day, the teacher, pointing to the Mongol camp across the Wen River, said, "There is a rope across the river into the camp. Stop the fighting." The official, Xiang, said, "How can I stop the fighting?" And the priest, Mugaku, suddenly grabbed hold of Xiang, shook him. And as all these koans go, there are many of them, Xiang instantly had realization and made a bow. How do you stop the fighting on the other side of the river? This is a koan about war and conflict within and without, and the imperative to end it. How do you stop the fighting across the river? How do you stop the war on the other side of the river? How do we stop the war in Ukraine? After all, there is the matter of distance, right? We're here, Ukraine is far away, so how can we? What can we do? How do we stop the fighting actually next door when we hear the neighbors fighting? How do we stop the fighting in our family? How do you stop yourself in the middle of a fight when you're ready to lash out? How do you stop the war? We have all, right, experienced intense conflict and the great emotional heat that creates vast distance between oneself, between me and the opponent. Right? And we're caught in the heat of war itself, the heat of our conflict, the heat of our anger. Suddenly, such a vast distance to the opponent, the enemy. Vast like the wide Ren River in the koan. The Ren River is in northwest Sichuan. That's the river that's mentioned in the koan. The other, the opponent, is so distinct, so separate, so singular. In this confusion, in this confusing haze of me versus you, us versus them, we forget. The priest Mugaku's words, there is a rope across the river. Throughout the literature of Buddhism, we find stories of war. Shakyamuni Buddha knew war very well. The Indian subcontinent at that time had many conflicts going on. It was divided up into pretty small kingdoms. It was a time when people were beginning to come together and form cities, city-states. And so there was often struggle as one kingdom tried to absorb another. Near the end of his life, his own clan, the Shakya clan, were crushed by an army from the neighboring kingdom of Magadha. In the Pali Canon, that collection of texts from focusing on kind of earlier Buddhism, we learn the Buddha tried three times to prevent the outbreak of war between the ancient kingdoms of Magadha and Kapilavastu, the home of the Shakya clan. Three times. Each time when he learned the battle was about to break out, the Buddha placed himself between the armies and sat upright in meditation. And according to the Pali Canon, the king of Magadha, not wanting to shed the blood of a renowned sage, would ask the Buddha, "Could you please move?" But the Buddha would then admonish the king not to enter battle, pointing out that violence only fosters violence, and this will lead only to pain and suffering. And three times the king retreated But pushed perhaps by his own greed, his vanity, maybe pushed by his advisors, the king returned. And so although the Buddha replaced himself three times between the armies, finally the Buddha realized there was nothing more he could do. And the fourth time happened, and Kapilavastu was defeated by the Magadha army. The priest, Mugaku, said, "There is a rope across the river." What is that rope? Over the past couple of weeks, I've noticed a bit less in the media about the war, as if it's too much, and a kind of collective blinking, or a little bit of a turning away, is just naturally happening. It's hard to be reminded of great suffering. And yet, part of our bodhisattva vows is not to turn away. Through our practice, we must discover how to bear witness to suffering. In our Zazen practice, as I'm sure you have all experienced, we have all experienced, we bear witness to our own suffering. And off the cushion, particularly, we bear witness to the suffering of others, the suffering of this world. The Zen teacher, now departed, but was quite a character, Bernie Glassman, taught that bearing witness is to take time to listen, to see, and then to testify about what one has seen and understood, to testify about what one knows. That's the meaning of to bear witness. Take the time to see. In our Zazen practice, we begin to see and bear witness to our own suffering and stories. And as part of our practice, we need to bear witness to the suffering of others. And this is done from the understanding of the interpenetration of our own and other suffering, that in the seamless fabric of this life, there really is no line between self and other, between my suffering and your suffering. Is this a rope across the river? The priest, Mugaku, said, "There's a rope across the river." The newspapers I read sometimes show images of war-blasted Ukraine, many with people injured or standing dazed. And we read, of course, about the millions who have fled and about those who are unable to flee the war zones. The heart breaks, and compassion arises easily for these Ukrainians. We also read about the Russians, some of the Russians who oppose the war, many now in prison or who have fled the country. Our heart goes out to them. But I have read less about the Russian soldiers on the ground. Almost nothing, really, just a little bit here and there. I don't know if young women are part of the invading force. But I wonder what these young soldiers think and feel about what they're asked to do. I wonder how their hearts and minds will be after this war is over, if they survive it. I hold them too in my heart. And so what about Putin and those around him who started this war, supported, and refused to stop it? How shall I think of them? Can I see their humanity, even though I cannot understand the heartlessness and cruelty that comes from them? The Bodhisattva vows we chant tell me to meet and to free all beings. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Right, the first line of the great Bodhisattva vows. Not just the good ones. Not just the ones I feel deserve it. So is this a rope across the river? Stop the war is a koan often given to students early on in their training when they're using koan to practice. Stop the war. How do we do this? Well, an encouraging hint is given by priest Mugaku, who said, there is a rope across the river. At first, we recognize, as we sit on a cushion, the wars inside and the many small wars around us, even in our daily life. Often I've noticed it's really hard to see the wars within because they camouflage themselves as me. And they remain unseen for what they really are unless I pause and sit and look really closely at what is going on in my heart. In our practice, when we sit down in Zazen, we do become more aware of the conflicts within, the critical voice ragging on about our inadequacies and how slovenly we are, the loneliness we want to get rid of, the list of things we should do but don't want to do, the fear of disappointing others, anger over being ignored, disgust, feeling we've done it wrong, we've made the wrong choices, got the wrong life. And then there's, of course, conflict with our boss, ongoing arguments with our spouse or children, struggling with an incompetent store clerk, fighting with the new computer program. Maybe railing against our illness, addiction, financial situation. Our personal wars, those within and those without, are all built on a tenacious view of duality and separation. Me and everyone else. This and that. Like and dislike, etc., etc. And this view of separation, really, I think, is the ground of wars within ourselves and in the world. It can be so hard to see beyond this view. In the Buddhist tradition, there are practices that we do that help us wake up to connection, to oneness, interbeing, all those words pointing at what lies at the very center of our being itself. Zazen, good practice for this. Loving kindness meditation, compassion meditation, sympathetic joy, equanimity, those practices of the Brahma Viharas. The practice of exchanging self for other, coming from the Tibetan tradition, which is regarding the suffering of others exactly as our own suffering, and to help others as if they were ourselves. All of these practices involve the imagination, the faculty of the mind that expands beyond the borders of our current reality. Or as Zokitsu Norman Fisher writes in his book, The World Could Be Otherwise, imagination expands our hearts and minds. It brings forth all forms of innovation. Is this a rope across the river? There are many ropes, I believe, across the river of separation. Sometimes they just appear in our hand, completely unexpected. But if we're present enough to recognize and use it, we stop the war. Let me give you an example. Here's a story of Zenkei Blanche Hartman, a two-term former abbess of the San Francisco Zen Center. In fact, she was the first woman to take up the abbacy there, San Francisco Zen Center. And this is a story about how she came to be ordained and stopped the war. She's the author of, her book is called Seeds for a Boundless Life, a collection of her talks which compiled by one of her students, who now is also very well known, Zenju Earthlin Manuel. And the last thing I want to say about Zenkei Blanche Hartman is that she was also a sewing teacher of the Okesa. And when I was a little sprout of a thing, sewing my first rakusu, blue rakusu, she was the sewing teacher. She came up to Bellingham. Yeah. And she died in 2016 at the age of 90. So a venerable person. Anyway, so here's her story in her words. During the Vietnam War, I was a political activist. I fought for peace. There was some contradiction. There wasn't any peace in me. I hated the people who disagreed with me. And that was a kind of war within myself. In 1968, I was just beginning to look at the way in which I was vigorously clinging to my opinions about things and denigrating others who had different opinions when there was a strike at the San Francisco State University. The police came with their masks and clubs and started poking people. Without thinking, I ducked under the hands of people to get between the police and students. I met this riot squad of policemen face to face. Pardon me, I met this riot squad policeman face to face with his mask on and everything. He was close enough to touch. I met this policeman's eyes straight on and had this overwhelming experience of identification, of shared identity. This was the most transformative moment of my life. Having experienced this moment of shared identity with the riot squad policeman, it was a gift. Nothing had prepared me for it. I didn't have any conceptual basis for understanding it. The total experience was real and incontrovertible. My life as a political activist ended with that encounter, because there was no longer anything to fight against. The way I described it to my friends was the policeman was trying to protect what he thought was right and good from all the other people who were trying to destroy it. And I was trying to do the same thing. Since I had no basis for understanding the experience of shared identity with somebody whom I considered complete other, in other words, the riot squad policeman, right? And because the experience had been so real and so powerful, I began to search for someone who could understand it, someone to explain it to me. How could a riot squad policeman and I be identical? In my search, I met Shinryu Suzuki Roshi. The way he looked at me, I knew he understood. And that is how I got there. That is how I became an ordained monastic. The koan for all of us. How do you stop the war? How do you stop the war? Well, as you hold this question, and please hold it over the coming weeks, first really understand, what is the war? Where is the war? And just knowing that, having touched base with that, perhaps you will find the rope across the river. So I think I'll stop here because I want us to have time to talk together in some small groups. So thank you for listening. And just before we get into the groups, let me give you the questions I'd like you to consider. What does it feel like to be at war? And consider this, you know, are there different kinds of wars? Is there a war right now for you, right here? What does it feel like to be at war? What kind of war? And is there a war right now here for you? That's kind of the question one. And the second question, are there battles that were once really important to you that you realize now you didn't have to fight? What happens when you stop fighting? So again, are there battles that were once important to you that you realize now you really didn't have to fight? And what happens when you stop fighting? And of course, if those two questions don't resonate for you, anything in the talk that you'd like to talk about, that'd be fine.